London, 1947. I don't remember. Or rather, she didn't want to remember, which was not the same thing. Juliet was quite content to leave gaps unfilled, stones unturned, honour unstained, thanks most awfully. Guilt, corrosive, soul-destroying guilt, that's why she'd agreed to this. An ex-Special Forces officer and his lab-coated minion probing her brain for details about a Nazi war criminal and his hapless victim. If she could help the Nazi hunter find Strasser and bring him to justice, if she could prove what had happened to Denise, but nothing could redress the wrong she'd done. The hypocrisy of the situation nagged like a string of bully beef between the upper molars. If only her war work had kept her out of the papers, she might have lived a lesser lie. A sort of drab median between heroism and cowardice, did her bit like everyone else. Nothing spectacular, life goes on. But her photograph had been splashed across the papers, headlines blaring, the sensational details of her courage and survival as an agent in occupied France breathlessly recounted. So there was no hope for it, was there? Dimly, she was aware of Felix, sitting on a bench against the wall, waiting for her to speak, his dark eyes brimful of compassion. That only made it 10 times harder to lie. At least the good doctor had patience and delicacy, if not the tact, to situate this interrogation in a room that didn't look like a prison cell. Hour upon hour of gentle questioning had elicited very little of use, however. She suspected that by now the SAS man burned to beat the truth out of her like dust from a Turkish carpet. A big man with a bad temper. No, she was safer with Dr. Leichhardt, but she'd better give them something soon, or the SAS man might try it his way. She was Juliet Barnard, late of the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, and, more secretly, of the British Special Operations Executive. That much they knew. Since that article in the Telegraph, and countless others like it, everyone in Britain knew. The SOE had sent agents parachuting behind enemy lines to wreak havoc on the Nazis. They blew up bridges, destroyed or stole weapons supplies, derailed trains, coordinated resistance fighters and rebels, and gleaned intelligence, relaying information back to Britain via wireless transmissions from portable transceivers. The organisation operated out of Baker Street in London, in offices marked Interservice Research Bureau. The SOE was so secret that even Parliament hadn't known about it. Guerrilla warfare was a sneaking kind of strategy, frowned upon by most upstanding British men. And if the public had known Churchill had sent women into the field, there would have been an uproar. Now it seemed that the Baker Street irregulars, as Churchill dubbed them, had flung secrecy and discretion to the winds in a flurry of self-justification, leaving her with undeserved notoriety. At least by helping Captain Steve McIntyre, she avoided the lecture tour of France they'd planned for her, a blatant public relations exercise. Even now, Juliet shuddered at the thought. She watched the thin man in the white coat with his sparse, mousy hair and delicate spectacles as he set up the recording machine once more. At a glance, he was unprepossessing, but there was a pink and white scrubbed-up kindliness to him that made her well-disposed towards him, if not toward the ginger way he sought to lead her through the worst months of her life. "Let's go even farther back," he suggested, "to the time before you left for France. What stands out to you? What do you remember?" Well, now, she could string this part out for days if need be. How long might she prevaricate before they'd come to the part of her story she would never tell? They weren't to know it, but her interests and theirs were not aligned.